So starting last week and leading up to the Christmas story, every single week we're digging deeper and deeper into that topic that you see right up there, that idea of words from the mouths of angels. They bring hope, they bring excitement, they bring anticipation, they bring joy. So much and in so many different ways in the Christmas story. And so as we prepare for the coming of Jesus, as we prepare to hear that Christmas story again, and we'll hear that Christmas story again here in just a little bit, we keep looking at those words spoken from the mouths of angels and see what they mean for our lives today. I hope that last week you were able to enjoy Thanksgiving. Maybe for some of you, Thanksgiving seems a long ways off already because we're already diving into the Christmas season. But I do hope that you had a great time celebrating Thanksgiving with friends or family, that you got to have some good food, maybe even watch a good football game. If you're a Vikings fan, I was really excited. We kind of made it through that game too. Cassie and I had a great Thanksgiving as well. My wife Cassie and I did. We had family, relatives from both sides of our families actually there, a packed house for us, and we had a wonderful time together, good food, good conversation, things like that. And I don't know what the tradition is in your family, but in my family, traditionally, we've kind of gone through Thanksgiving fairly quickly, like I just mentioned. Christmas has kind of come right around the corner. As soon as Thanksgiving ends, we've been right on to Christmas. And that was especially true as my siblings and I got older. We'd be off at college, we would come home for the Thanksgiving break, we'd stuff ourselves with turkey, and the very next day, or maybe the day after that, we would be out as a family looking for our very own Christmas tree. And we would decorate the house and everything would kind of get into the spirit of Christmas before we all had to go back to college again. And Cassie and I kind of followed that same tradition again this year. After everyone was at our house for Thanksgiving, the Sunday afternoon right after Thanksgiving, there we were with my brother and his wife as well, out in a local tree farm looking to cut our very own Christmas tree this year to kind of step into the Christmas season. And this was kind of a very special day because my brother and his wife, they're in their very first year of marriage. So this is their first Christmas as husband and wife. Big moment, some of you can remember back to that time. First tree they ever cut down together as a couple. And so it was really special for them. Later on Sunday afternoon, we were out in the forest where the unsheared, unpruned, they call them natural Christmas trees. I don't know the difference. But we were out where all those trees were, trying to find one. They're a little bit cheaper. They're more naturally grown, whatever. And no one else was around. And so we decided that it was a good time to take a picture. Now, when I take pictures, my phone is down there. Normally, that's what I use, is my cell phone. I just point, shoot, kind of move on with the day. Nothing else really matters beyond that. But my brother is a professional photographer. And he had a backpack on him, which meant that he brought his professional camera with him. And so he said, "Hey, John, can you take a picture of us by this tree?" And he handed me his camera. And realistically, this is what his camera pretty much looked like. But when I turned it around and I saw all the buttons on the other side and how everything operated, to me, this is pretty much what it looked like if I have a clicker. There you go. You're just going to follow me. That's pretty much what it looked like for me. It was just mass chaos. I didn't really know what was going on. The picture looked fuzzy in the lens. I wasn't sure how I was going to actually take an accurate picture. And so I had to ask him for help. I had to ask him for some assistance on how I would even take the picture in the first place. And he gave me a few pointers, and it was interesting. I noticed it after the fact. Almost naturally, as soon as I learned how to operate the camera, I kind of started to act like I knew exactly how to take a photo, right? I got into like camera person mode, getting the angle right and the level just right, like I knew how to center their faces just perfectly in the background, even though I have no idea how to do any of that. I did everything I could to try to mask my inadequacy in the situation. And realistically, it's not just me that does that, right? Every single one of us do that from time to time. We try to mask the inadequacies that we have, or at least that we think that we have in our lives. And photos are a great way. They show us that in such a powerful way. We will spend hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars on high quality, touched up high school graduation or wedding photos because we want to put our best foot forward. If we're technologically savvy, we will spend hours and hours on the computer cropping and editing, changing the backgrounds and saturation and everything else like that to make our pictures look just perfect. And if we're not technologically savvy, we'll just go find a filter online that helps make it look a little bit better than it already does. And full disclosure, we had some fun. You're just going to have to click for me. We had some fun with filters this week as a staff at Liberty Ridge covering our inadequacies. Of course, I am not a Sith Lord, and I don't think Candy really wants a pizza beard, and I don't even know what's going on with Laura over there, but we love using filters to try to cover some of the inadequacies that we feel like we have in our lives. And on a more serious note, we do this all the time, don't we? We try to say the right stuff, do the right things, maybe put ourselves in the right position in life, maybe use filters for all of our photos to try to mask the things that we feel a little bit of shame about. Whether we feel like they're our fault or they're just things that we carry with ourselves. Really, every single one of us fights a battle with inadequacy every single day. And realistically, this is the root problem with inadequacy. Inadequacy is ultimately created by a lack of approval in our lives. Inadequacy is like this small little person that sits on our shoulder that nobody else can see and nobody else can hear, but it sits down and it whispers to us, you don't have what it takes. You're not quite good enough. And we hear that voice so often that it becomes easy to listen to it from time to time. And whenever we listen to inadequacy, what really ends up happening is we just put inadequacy in the driver's seat of our lives. It dictates a lot of what we do. It drives our pursuit of power, of prestige, of possessions. It leads us where we think we need to go to find approval. Because this is the reality, that when we feel inadequate, we seek out a stamp of approval to tell us that we're okay. And we seek it out in all different kinds of places. Maybe you seek it out the most from your boss or from your spouse. Those two are not related. Maybe you seek it out from your kids or your friends or your classmates. Maybe you seek it from your parents, even though you're a parent yourself already today. Maybe you look for it from yourself because you are your own worst critic. I can feel the room getting a little uncomfortable. We all fight with inadequacy. We all struggle with it. We spend hours and hours, if not physically, at least mentally, struggling with our inadequacies on a daily basis, trying to find some sort of sense of approval, something to tell us that we're okay, something to tell us that we are made whole again. But in the midst of that reality, I have a question for you. What would it actually take for you to feel significant today? What would it actually take? More money, more power, a fixed relationship, something else. Whether you consider yourself a church person or not, or you call yourself a follower of Jesus or not, today I want to invite you to see a little bit of a different answer to that question. And I want to invite you to see that answer to that question through the lens of the story that you just heard in the video a moment ago, from the account of Jesus' life written by this doctor and historian who lived a long time ago, around the time of Jesus. His name was Luke. And it's one of those crazy angel stories that happens in the Bible. If you've ever read the Bible before, you know that these stories come up every now and then where suddenly an angel appears, and oftentimes it can lead us to ask a lot more questions than have answers, right? But we start to be like, okay, well, what was Gabriel actually like? What does an angel look like? Did it sound like that creepy woman voice that was in the video? Does it sound like something else? How come Mary didn't just faint from like being scared? What actually is going on here? But today I just want to invite you to set all of those questions aside and just hear the story that Luke tells. And the kids will take it the rest of the way and tell the rest of Luke's Christmas story in just a moment. But for now, we can start right where Luke starts, with a woman named Mary. If you know anything about the Christmas story, you know that Mary is a pretty important figure, right? She's one of the key figures at the center of the Christmas story. And yet if we went back to that day and age and we kind of evaluated Mary on how great of a person she was according to societal standards back then, she doesn't really measure up. I mean, at the time that Gabriel comes to meet her, she's just a young teenager. Most historians say between the ages of 13 and 15 years old, which just baffles me. Maybe it baffles you too. She's not rich. She's not powerful. She's not related to any sort of influence. She's residing in the area of Galilee, which may mean nothing to us, but in the land of Judah back then, that was where all the nobodies lived. And then, oh yeah, we can't forget that she's a woman, which means she was a second-class citizen, if we can even call it that back then. And yet, in the midst of all of that reality, this is what Luke writes. Hear it again. He says, God sent an angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a village in Galilee, to a virgin named Mary. She was engaged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of King David. Gabriel appeared to her and said, "Greetings, favored woman. Greetings, favored woman. The Lord is with you." And I love this. Right away, in the very next verse, the very first three words that Luke writes describes how Mary reacts. This is what he says. He says, confused and disturbed. And we're like, yeah, Mary was confused and disturbed. You think there's this strange man who is suddenly in her house proclaiming this like really joyful message, which seems to make absolutely no sense. But here he is saying, Mary, you are highly favored. And in that favor, he says, you're going to bring forth the Son of God, the Savior of the world, into the world. In fact, this is what the angel Gabriel says. He says, you will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will name him Jesus, and he will reign over Israel forever. His kingdom will never end. And on the surface, let's be honest, that makes no sense. Because Mary doesn't check any boxes. She's not a terrible person, right? But she's not that great of a person either, if we're really trying to be critical. Certainly not to be the mother of the Son of God. And yet the angel Gabriel comes in and says, "Greetings, favored woman." He doesn't say, "Mary, you're inadequate." As a matter of fact, he says, "Mary, you're more than adequate. Not because of you, but because of the action of Almighty God." And I say that because back in Luke chapter 1, verse 28, where the angel says to Mary, "Greetings, favored woman," quite honestly, that doesn't translate into English all that well from the language Luke was writing in. Back then, Luke wrote this whole entire account in a language called Koine Greek, and you don't really need to remember what type of Greek it is, but he's writing in Greek. And when he writes that phrase, the whole entire phrase is passive, which a little grammar lesson then means that Mary is the direct object of the sentence, which means she's not the subject, which means the favoring is being done to her. He says, "Mary, you are being favored." And better yet, when we translate that word favored into English, when we go back to Greek again, the root word that's there that Luke uses is the Greek word charis, which simply means grace. And the only reason why I bring that up is because every single time Luke uses charis in his account, he's using it to talk about the unmerited, unearned, undeserved approval of God. God's loving action and grace in the midst of imperfection in the world. And so it's a really loose translation, but this is pretty much what the angel Gabriel is saying to Mary. He's saying, "Greetings, woman who stands in the undeserved approval of the Lord." Think of the power, think of the force of that phrase. In a world, and this still happens today, and it happened back then, in a world where there are so many different standards to live up to, in a world where there are so many opportunities to see your own inadequacies and to feel inadequacies all over the place. When God comes looking for the mother of his son, he doesn't start by looking for the biggest or the richest or the best. He just starts by looking for Mary. Regardless of who she is, regardless of her background, he just wants Mary. And the angel Gabriel doesn't come to Mary and say, "Well, Mary, you got to get your life in order if you're going to be the mother of the Son of God." He doesn't come to her and say, "You have this filter you're using and this filter, you're inadequate in all these different ways. Ship up or we're going to find somebody else." No. He says, Mary, you're valued by God. God is coming, Mary, to meet you with his grace. He will make you more than adequate. And Mary goes on to experience what it's like to bring forth the Son of God into the world. It's an amazing story, but it changes our question a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, ask yourself that question one more time. What would it actually take for you to feel significant today? I think many of you know this. I know this, although I forget it from time to time, that the reality is also this. You can go to the next slide. That almost everything you look to for significance will also and can also feed your inadequacies. If you want to spend your whole entire life running after money, then you will steamroll people and things in the process. If you want to try to be the perfect parent, I don't mean to cause you any anxiety, but if you try to do that, you will manipulate your kids a bunch and they will really struggle with it. If you think that you need to be the favorite son or daughter of your mom and dad, you will just shortcut your siblings in the process. And if you want to be the best employee or executive there is in your area, it's very likely that your family and your friends will be left behind. And then there's yourself, too. If you can only give grace to other people, but you can't give grace to yourself, I'm telling you this from experience. You're fighting a battle that is nearly impossible to win on your own. Praise be to God that we have friends and people who can walk with us, like Stephen ministers. Because in the midst of all of that, the heart of God that we see so clearly in this little story between Mary and the angel Gabriel, the message that comes out so clear from the mouths of angels, my friends, is that when God comes looking for you, he doesn't come looking for the biggest or the richest or the best. He doesn't come making a list and checking it twice. He doesn't come looking for you to be the best person like the biblical figures that we read about, even though they're not perfect either. He doesn't come asking you to be the favorite son or daughter or to be the perfect parent, because the reality is that God is only looking for you. Not you plus something. Not you with it all figured out. Not even you believing all the right stuff. God is just looking for you. Because he created you. Because you're precious to him. And in the midst of the inadequacies that you have in your life, he comes to meet you with his grace. That's why the Christmas story even happens. That's why the scene between Mary and the angel Gabriel even happens. Jesus comes as the Son of God down to earth to live the life that we could never live, to die in our place for our inadequacies, to bring us forgiveness and life, to wash us clean. And when he gives up his life for us, it's as if God comes into your life with a giant stamp and says, you are approved. Maybe. There you go. You're approved. You're forgiven because of my grace. Because God created you, you have value. But even more importantly, because of his grace, you don't have to let your inadequacies define you. Instead, as Jesus invites each and every one of us to follow him, really what he does is he invites us to live from his approval rather than for anyone else's. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's not something that automatically is going to change as soon as you leave here. No longer will your inadequacies define you. You will be fighting this battle for your whole entire life on this sinful and broken world. I'm sorry. But as we go back to Jesus again and again and again and remember that he does invite us to live from his approval, that on the cross he says, I have made you okay in me. It begins to change us. And I love the way that Luke ends this story because he gives us a glimmer of what that change looks like. After everything the angel Gabriel says, after everything that goes on, Mary has the last words in the story. She says, I am the Lord's servant. May everything you have said about me come true. Ladies, remember that time when you first found out you were pregnant? That's not an easy statement to say, is it not? And yet also in the midst of that, she's a teenage girl and her world is about ready to turn upside down. And yet as she stands in God's approval, it moves her to a place of freedom. She goes from being confused and disturbed to a place of peace, ready to follow where God is leading. Changed Mary's life. And so think about this. What might it look like for you to live from God's approval rather than for someone else's? Because that's what you're invited to do through Jesus. The kids are going to tell the rest of the Christmas story, but I hope you would keep that question in the back of your mind. Because the story you're about to hear is God breaking into the world to bring you exactly that.